A very good afternoon to you. The time is 12:07, and you're tuned to Midday Matters Outer Spaces here on 89.1 FM. I'm Sean Beter. Happy to be with you on this Thursday afternoon. And it's the first Thursday of the month, in fact, the first day of the month, and that means Jason Kissel from Acres Land Trust is here once again with another, I think, challenging topic, which we'll get to in just a moment. Jason, thanks for being here.
Oh, you're welcome.
Of course, the usual suspect is in studio as well, Mr. Doug Hackbarth. Doug, how are you?
I'm doing great, thank you.
It's the first of November already, 3 weeks till Thanksgiving. Yeah. I don't know where the time went. I don't know where the year went.
And it's a beautiful day, too.
It is a beautiful day.
Sun shining.
Finally shaking off some of the sandy that came our way.
Oh, yeah, gosh. And I wish everyone got to see that sky that was up there this morning. I happened to be outside rather early, and the moon is full, and the stars, I think the stars were almost brighter than the moon this morning. It was unbelievable.
That's a
gorgeous.
Good morning. A little bit later in the program, we'll open up the phones and take your questions or comments about your own outer spaces. We are inviting you to answer this question, though, and that question is, where on earth do you live? We'll explain in just a moment, but I'll give the numbers first, 260-452-1185. Of course, you can always email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, that's facebook.com/middaymatters, or you can send us a tweet. Jason Kissel, this is a big question, and if you ask me, where on earth do you live, I'm going to give you my street address, but that's not the question you're asking today.
Yeah, we're really asking people to really think about where physically on this planet called Earth you really live. And so if you were to take away all the man-made objects that we typically rely on to show directions, and so you can't mention the city you live in, can't mention the street you live on, can't mention the township, can't mention whatever, how do you explain to people where you live? And it seems like such a simple question, but many of us can't answer that. Sometimes it's too difficult. And what that really realized to me is the fact that we become almost so disconnected from our natural world that we really don't even know where we live within it. And so there's many ways to describe where we live, but we just tend to do the easiest thing. You know, it's very easy to say, well, I live on 123 Main Street and in this town, and people know where that is and they can find you. But what if we all had the common knowledge to say, here's where I live. Here's the geography of my area. Here's the plant life. Here's the unique natural features. Enough that we all had that same shared knowledge. We all kind of know the grid systems in the country, and we know the roads in developed areas. But what if we all had that common knowledge to say, go until you come to this big moraine, and you'd have to know what a moraine is first. Okay, it's kind of a hill from a glacial deposit. Then after you go for that, look for this creek. And then after the oak forest turn into more of a hickory forest and you get into some of these other areas, then turn north. And then, so how would you describe where you live if you couldn't rely on man-made structures?
And so really, you're talking about a much older form of orienteering, almost. The old 100 paces to the old oak tree, and then west for 50 paces till you get to the creek. And
I'd like to answer the question.
You're gonna give it a shot.
I've got one. Yeah, since you asked me this before the show started, I've been thinking about it.
Well, let me invite our listeners one more time we want you to describe where you live in these terms today. Please do give us a call and share it with us. I think we're very interested to hear what y'all have to come up with today. 260-452-1185, or you can call us toll free at 1-800-471-9264. Okay, Doug, let's hear it.
I live 100 in the Sandy Cove, 100 miles south of where the glaciers cut the Great Lakes of Lake Michigan and Lake Erie. I live between that 100 miles south. That's my answer.
Does that meet the standard?
I'm not sure I'd be able to find your home from that. Now, it's hard when you start to think that way. And so let's look at the studio we're in now. I would have a hard time describing how to get here. I would probably start with a confluence of the three rivers. If you're in a Fort Wayne area, that's probably going to be your starting point. Whereas before, Sean, if you were to give somebody directions, now you'd probably say, well, from I-69, we're in Fort Wayne, go to I-69 and then take this road to this road.
I would probably just point to the 600-foot tower outside the studio.
But if you take the name city away, if you take the road systems away, in Fort Wayne at least, they've got a great natural starting point for directions. Well, where these three rivers combine, or where they can, you know, their confluence is, start from there. And then everybody kind of has a starting point. And then from there, you really have to know your local environment. Directions are very helpful. You know, go north, and then all of a sudden you'll start to go up this incline, and then you'll notice this, and you'll notice this changes and this changes. But it's that what this is. You know, and a botanist will describe the directions very different than a geologist. Hmm. And so if we had to describe where we are and where we live that way, just imagine the wealth of information that we would need to know. We would need to know, you know, what physiological region we're in. You know, we're in what's called a central till plane, and that doesn't mean much to a lot of people. We'd have to know what that means. That means there's a certain geology, and the plant material you're going to see is a certain way. Allen County is kind of split between some of those areas. If we knew our rocks well enough, I could tell people how to get to the Acres office because we're on the edge of two different rock zones.
Hmm.
Hey, you know, if you start to see these Devonian rocks, stop because you've gone too far. Come back a little bit more, hit the Cedar Creek Valley, go east until you see this bluff that juts about 40 feet above the bank to the north. There's two sycamores that have a distinct lean over the creek. Go up the hill and you'll see our Acres office.
Hmm.
It's, you know, I don't have that knowledge to know the difference between the rock types, but it's obvious. If we'd have paid attention to that, and if that was the only thing we had to go on, I could tell people how to get to the Acres office if they had the shared knowledge of geology just by the rocks that they would encounter as they're moving north from the confluence of the rivers near what we call Fort Wayne.
Well, let's say you gave a good example with the Acres office there. I know that you were really started thinking about this, I think, when you moved to this region.
Correct.
Is that right?
Yep.
Well, give us first of all, tell us, I mean, what got you started in thinking about that? Because I know, you know, there are a lot of things to consider when you're buying a house anyway.
Sure.
But then maybe give us an example and describe your direction.
Sure. You know, when we look for a house to live in, you know, you start to look at all these things. You know, we have young children, so you look at school districts. And so you look at all these blobs on maps, you know, all these little lines that we've drawn. Okay, well, we're going to be in this county. Are we outside the city limits? That was important to us. Yes, okay. What school district are we in? What's our zip code? You learn all these weird little things that we've drawn on a piece of paper somewhere, and they become really important to us. And so when you're looking for where to live, you go through all these checklists of all these things. And I realized that we would buy a house and not even think a whole lot about the natural area that we were in. And that's my line of business. I mean, that's what I do. I work for Acres, and we look for really significant natural areas. And I thought, man, if I'm not even paying attention to this, if it's not as important to me as looking up the school district, or even my zip code. I learned my zip code quicker than I learned where I was on this world. You know, it's those kinds of things that we have just become so far removed from land that we don't even consider it. And so my address now is really easy. I live at the confluence of the Wabash River and the Salamone River. Hmm. If you start there and go, it's due northwest, a little bit north-northwest, but if you set your compass to northwest, you'd arrive. And so from that confluence, if you start heading northwest, you'll start to walk through this really wide valley, and then you'll start to go up this really steep hill. And that was the old bank of the Wabash River. It's about a mile from where the current Wabash River lies. And so as you go up that hill, then you'll notice things start to flatten up at the top. But if you keep bearing northwest, you'll go through two patches of small forest. One's going to be very dry because it's up on a hill. You'll start to go up a hill, and so you'll have an oak hickory forest. You'll walk through open fields for another about half mile. Then you'll start to enter one more dry forest. As soon as you get through that second dry forest, continuing northwest, you'll see in the distance a small patch a forest. It's the only forest that's out there that you'll see at that point. And you'll know it's ours if once you get to it. It'll be different than those other two forests you walk through. It'll be wetter. It's a very flat forest, and so it holds water. And so instead of the oak and hickories that you'll see a lot of maples. You'll see some oak and hickory, but not as much. You'll see the different species. There'll be swamp white oak instead of the regular white oak. And in our house is at the very northern edge of that. So our natural address now is very easy because we live near a very distinct water feature, the river. But again, I think people could physically get to our house from those directions. I think if you looked on Google Earth, you could tell right now exactly where I live. And so it's really us getting that same knowledge of everywhere we go. I can't do the same to get to the studio. I really can't think right now of a natural feature that I would point out to get from the confluence to here. And that's sad because I drive these roads a lot. I go downtown a lot. I'm in meetings all over this portion. I've never paid attention because I'm looking for the next road. Oh, I take this to State Street and I go south and then I do this and then I find the address.
I want to interrupt here. We have to go to a break in just a moment, but I want to invite our listeners. Yeah, maybe you don't have to be quite as specific as Jason. He's been thinking about this for a while. but take a look around. Think about the natural resources, the natural features that you pass by every day, and maybe have just kind of blended in to the landscape on your daily commute. We want you to describe your natural directions. 260-452-1185, or you can always call us toll free 1-800-471-9264. Of course, our Facebook page is open as well, as is our Twitter account. That's at Midday Matters. Share your thoughts with us this hour. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Julia Meek, and what's happening this week on Meet the Music? Jazzy Piano with Tom Brigham, rock pop originals from Steve Hall, and the smooth indie rockitude of Letting Love. That's Thursday night from 7 to 9 here at 89.1 FM, or listen online at nipr.fm, a two-hour serving of homegrown delights here on Meet the Music.
Joe Queenan makes a living from writing, but ask him about reading.
It is an obsession.
It's his life.
Constantly reading 60, 70 books simultaneously.
He's nearing 7,000 books.
I guess the ordinary person doesn't do that.
One for the Books, Joe Queenan, later on All Things Considered from NPR News. All Things Considered airs weekday afternoons at 4 on WBOI, Northeast Indiana Public Radio.
On the next Fresh Air, Tom Ricks, author of the bestseller Fiasco, about the invasion of Iraq, discusses his new book, The Generals, about what happens when mediocre generals aren't relieved of their command. He says in World War II, generals were held accountable for their lack of success, but that started to change with the Korean War. Join us.
Fresh Air, weekdays at 1 on WBOI.
From Hurricane Katrina to the election of Barack Obama to Trayvon Martin, in a new book, media critic Eric Deggans argues that cable news and talking heads feed on a steady diet of fear and prejudice. And he says the audience can stop it. I'm Neil Conan, Race Baiter. Eric Deggans joins us next Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Tune in weekdays at 2 here on WBOI, Northeast Indiana Public Radio.
It's Midday Matters, Outer Spaces on 89.1 FM. Good afternoon. The time is 12:21. I'm Sean Beter, along with Doug Hackbarth, and because it's the first Thursday of the month, Jason Kissel from Acres Land Trust is here. We're talking during the first part of the program here about your natural address, I guess you'd call it, Jason. How would you give somebody directions to the place where you live if you didn't have an address, let's say. If you couldn't say I'm in Indiana, you couldn't say I'm in Allen County or Fort Wayne. How would you get people to get to your location? Well, the bigger point of this, of course, is we're asking you to take a second look around at the natural features near you. And we want you to try to describe the area in which you live. 260-452-1185. You can always post on our Facebook wall or send us a tweet at Midday Matters. And our email address, of course, it's middaymatters@nipr.fm. Jason gave a very good example about of his natural location, his natural directions. Jason, there are probably a few folks in our audience right now saying, "Why?" and I want you to talk about why, but also help give us kickstart us here. Give us some ideas about what we can look for to kind of put into that memory bank that would help folks get to our natural address.
Sure. Well, the why for me is just knowing where you are in a sense of place. Think about your street address. You have some kind of relationship with everybody who shares your street address, just because even if you don't know them, you live on my street, that you automatically become connected to them. If we start looking at our natural addresses in the same way, all of a sudden we become connected to not only the people who live within our, say, our sub-watershed or within our geological zone, but we start to realize our connection to it. And so instead of just turning on the tap water and saying, oh, there's my water, you all of a sudden, when you realize where you live on this thing called Earth, you understand where that water came from. And so you understand that, say you live in a country and have a well. If you understand the geology of your county, you're going to know where that well water came from. And you're going to care a little bit more about what happens upstream, even though it's underground. And so, and then when you're out washing a car, you know now, since the watershed you live on, it goes down this hill to this little creek, and then it flows into this creek called Mud Creek, and then it goes right into the Wabash. And then all of a sudden, that Wabash goes all the way through the state, makes it down to the Ohio River, and then it goes into the Mississippi, then it goes to the Gulf of Mexico. All of a sudden, you're connected now to the Gulf of Mexico. Whereas before, if you say, I live on 123 Main Street, you're connected to that street and to that town. If you know where you live, you're connected to a great big world. And that's amazing to me. start to realize, wow, when people say that I can conserve water, I can serve this, whatever. But you start to realize, wow, I'm actually impacting Dr. Jones, who lives down the street. My water, what I do here, that's where he's pulling his well from. I didn't realize that. I'm not going to dump my oil back there in the thing anymore. All of a sudden, you become connected not only to where you live, but to those around you. You sense some responsibility.
We're talking today about your natural address, and we want you to give it a shot. Take a look around. Think about your daily commute, perhaps, and give us some general natural directions, how we might be able to find you. 260-452-1185. You can always call 1-800-471-9264. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm, or you can find us via social media. Looks like we have a caller on the line. Let's go to Rick. Rick on line one, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Hey there.
Hi there.
Where I live now.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Well, where I live now is so urbanized, almost any trace of the natural world is hidden behind concrete and brick facades. Hmm. But I could definitely be where I went to college. I went to OU in Athens, Ohio. So it's nestled in the northern end of the Appalachian Mountains. And you could take where the Hocking River meets the Ohio River, follow it north and then west, and where it swings back north again puts you right in the middle of Athens. And on the northern side of it, there are three big hills, and I would have lived on the western side of the middle hill there.
Great. Terrific.
What do you think, Jason?
I like it. It's broad enough where if you know the river systems, you can get close. And so he's basically saying, instead of city and state, he's giving you that same information through the rivers. then he's giving you very specific information at the end, at this portion of the river. And so then you become into that kind of that county. And then you really get into more specifics of, okay, you'll notice three big natural features, three hills. And so then you're starting to get into subdivisions almost. Instead of saying this subdivision, you're saying it's the middle hill and then on the west side. At that point, you're really close. And then you'd have to really probably get into very specific vegetation or something that's, you know, one weird erratic rock that's different than all the rest. But I think I could get there.
I never thought of hills as nature's subdivision, but that sounds, if ever they need an ad campaign, that's the one. Rick, it seems that was a wonderful description. Thank you. And it sounds like, at least with where you currently live, you're running into the same problem that I have, in terms of trying to describe where I live. It seems like it's all parking lots and dumpsters and roads and cars where I am anymore. Let me put this to Jason Kissel. You know, a lot of folks, who live in the Fort Wayne area, will have a lot of trouble, have the same trouble that Rick's having and that I'm having.
Yeah, you know, a lot of times you count on water. And so you'll have to, if you can't find a creek nearby or a major river or things like that, water always is flowing in one direction. And so that's a great indicator of where you are. Is your water flowing north, south, east, or west? And then trace it back to where it's going. And that may give you your first reference point. And it may just be a small stream or something like that. The vegetation will show you. You know, if you have a significant change in vegetation, you get up a little bit further north, and you'll start to see certain species that you don't see in Allen County. So if we were attuned to that, we could say, hey, where you stop seeing this tree and you start seeing this one, you start seeing larches and tamaracks, that's about getting close to the area. Then you kind of give them your county. There's other things that you can do too. Again, if you know geology, that's a wealth of information, or soils. You know, if we were all to be the knowledge that we had 100 years ago to go pick up a piece of soil, rub it between your thumb and your forefinger, and just by that one simple act, which I could do for about 2 months in college from an agronomy course and then forgot it, if we all had that common knowledge that we used to all have, we would be able to tell soil type just from that one simple thing, reaching down and putting it in between our fingers.
Rick, it sounds like you passed the test today. Thank you so much for the call.
Thank you.
All right.
Have a good day.
Have a very good day. Thank you. 260-452-1185 is the number to call. If you'd like to give this little test a shot, we want you to describe where you live and how to get there without an address, a state, a city, any of those boundaries set up by man. Looks like we have a few more callers on the line. Want to give it a shot. Tim from New Haven. Tim, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters. Tim, are you with us?
He's not responding because you said he's from New Haven.
Oh,
there's your answer.
Looks like I gave the game away here. Tim, unfortunately, we can't hear you. If you'd like to give us a call back, we'll try to get you on the air here. Let's move down the line and go to Lewis on line three. Lewis, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Well, hello, Jason. How are you doing? This is Louis Miller up at Chi-Lai, Indiana.
Oh, doing well.
I have a small canoe rental business, and I use landmarks quite a bit to tell people where are they going to put in, where are they going to take out, what island to look for if they want to go camping, and it's been real helpful that way. We've had to learn the river quite a bit just so we can tell people where you're going to go.
You know, that's a great example, too, because even though Louis knows the river very well, I know you know him, and he's up and down that river a lot. And that's what it takes. It takes you being aware of your natural environment to start to notice what's different. And so on your first trip down the Ill River, you're not going to notice a lot of this. But he can impart that to people and say, you're going to notice that this is different. And so he relays that to people so they know where to get in and out so he can pick them up. And so, you know, it takes time to develop your natural knowledge, because the first time through, you're not going to know what's really distinct until you've been through it several times. And you start to notice, oh, this changes this type of year. And so you'll notice things that you can give people directions to in the spring, but they're not noticeable in the fall. And so there's all those cues in nature that are there if you're if you can just observe them.
Well, something else I've noticed is the river changes a little bit. One year an island will be there, and the next year it might not.
I think that just shows how attuned you are and how attuned folks need to be sometimes to be able to really meet this challenge. And it sounds like you're very much in touch with your surroundings, Louis.
Well, thank you. It was good talking to you.
We appreciate the call, and thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Have a very good day. 260-452-1185 is the number to call if you'd like to give this a shot in the last few moments of this segment. Let's move on down the line. We've got Sean on line 4. Sean, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for taking the call. I appreciate it.
Sure.
I'm new to Indiana, so I live in a very rural area. Unfortunately, it's a small town, Montpelier. It's not the greatest place in the world, and I have a difficult time in and of itself explaining to people how to get there following just simple road directions. I'm wondering, if you're living in an area like that where everything looks the same, where it's all farm, corn, and soy, there's not a significant waterway, I wouldn't even know how to begin how to explain where I am living from the perspective that you're talking. Moving from Michigan, it's easy to do because you've got those sort of natural landmarks everywhere. I wouldn't even know where to begin and how to start that process.
Yeah.
Any ideas of what I would look for when it's flat and nothing but soybeans and cornfields? I could say, imagine the worst place on earth to live if you're there. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, in Montpelier, you got the benefit of the Salamone River kind of as a starting point. If I'm not mistaken,
right.
It flows just south of town. And so that's probably going to have to be your starting point. And then from there, it really does probably would take some intricate knowledge, because we have a preserve in that area. And you're right that there's not a lot of natural features. It's a lot of relatively flat farmlands. But what you'll notice if you look at a topography map of the county, you're going to notice that even though it's slight, mm-hmm. I think it goes north. And so the further north you go, you may gain a couple feet of elevation. And so that may help. If someone doesn't even know what north is, you can say, well, if you notice you're starting to walk uphill slightly, you're heading the right direction. And then from there, when it's really turned into a lot of agricultural based, it's getting back to that soil knowledge. If you look at a soil map of Blackford County, you're
right.
going to see this just rainbow of colors. And that's the different soil types that are there. And so even if you don't know exactly the soil, if you were knowledgeable and the people going to your home were knowledgeable, you could say, you know, it gets less sandy the closer you get. That would be an indication. Or there's more loam, or the soil gets darker if you come this direction. Or, you know, there's this really dark band of soil. If you follow it, you're going to be pretty close and then go west.
Is the soil affected, though, by the irrigation and the fertilization and all that through so many of the crops that are growing? Or would you look for the soil that's on a private property?
Well, you know, soil can be changed somewhat, and it's mainly just the nutrients that you find in there. Soil itself doesn't change very much. You can add organic material to it and change mm-hmm. the composition some, but we use soil so much on the nature preserves because they don't change. We can tell what that was several hundred years ago by the soil. And so soils are great to do this kind of a thing because they really don't change much. They get degraded and things like that. But yeah, it's harder there. But if you notice, you'll start to see either different plant life or different rocks. And, you know, it's hard. It really is. This isn't an easy thing to do when we're used to looking for roads and things like that. When we're starting to look for natural features, sometimes they're slight, but we'll become like the Eskimos where we'll have 60 different names for a flatness. You know, if we were really to be that in tune.
Where is that preserve that you were talking about in Montpelier?
It's just west of Montpelier, and it's not open to the public yet. And
okay.
so we don't give the exact address or natural address. I will tell you, though, that it is along the Salamone River. Beautiful preserve. Yep.
I appreciate it. Thank you for the time.
This is Sean, thank you so much for the call. We appreciate it, and have a very good day.
Now, I want to ask a question. Is this cheating? I'm assuming that we're doing this back in frontier days, right? So we don't have roads and buildings and things like that. So is it cheating to say, I'm going to take my wife's white bloomers and hang them from a dead tree? And then when you see that dead tree with the bloomers hanging on top, that's where I live. Well, that's not really cheating, is it?
No, and that's the way a lot of people did. You know, there would be blaze markings on trees, but you had to get close enough to that tree to see the blaze marking. And so you look at, if you look at the region, there's lots of natural landmarks. The Summit City, because it's the tallest place along the canal system. And so the people knew, okay, well, that's kind of the highest point of this whole system. Hanging Rock down in Wabash County, we're listing it on the National Register of Historic Places because it's been used as a wayfinding through the Revolutionary War from Native Americans back as far as their oral tradition goes. Same thing with Seven Pillars along the Mississinewa down in Peru. And so sometimes these are just the gathering places because they're so unique and obvious.
We've got two more callers on the line who want to take a stab at this, and then we have to get to a break, so let's get back to the phones. We've got Tim on the line. Tim, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me this time?
We got you this time. Sorry we missed your call last time around. Go ahead.
Well, that's okay. You can find where I live by coming from Lake Erie or by coming from the confluence of the Three Rivers. If you come from Lake Erie, you just get on the Maumee and keep coming and keep coming until you get to the Three Rivers Junction. You'll pass numerous other rivers in Ohio, but when you get over here, then let's say you're at Three Rivers, the junction there. Well, then you'd come east and you'd travel until the meandering river with its second channel now, which is man-made, but it's also a physical thing. So when its second channel ends, the river will make a real sharp north turn, and then it'll make a real sharp turn to the east again. And that puts you just about a quarter mile from the mouth of the Trier Creek, which comes in from the south. And you can get on the Trier Creek and take it down in about half a mile and head to the southeast, and you'll bump into me.
Jason Kissel, that's pretty darn good.
That's great. And like we were talking before, he used nothing but river and waterways. And so often that's the easiest, and that's the, you know, it's very, everybody can follow that. That's great directions. Right. I mean, I think that we could get there all the way from Lake Erie to very close to his
house. To his house. And, you know, it brings up a good point that we talked about on the last commercial is we need to know where you're coming from, which, of course, he answered that question, you know. And that's when I first answered mine, I don't know why, I just assumed I was coming from the north.
Yeah.
Well, Tim, you nailed it. Great job. Thank you.
Well, thanks. Can I add a little something else to this?
Sure.
If you're coming, if you were really going to be doing that 80 miles as the crow flies or 120 miles as the river meanders from Lake Erie at Toledo, although it's a human place, there are certain geographical things that you run into. First is there's a Great Falls of the Maumee, okay, or the Great Rapids of the Maumee, where it's all shelf limestone, and the water will drop 2 or 3 feet going off of these slabs, working its way down to Lake Erie. So you got to fight your way through that. But then you have a limited number of islands that come up. We did this one time by canoe, going the other way, but there are islands that you can stop at, and when you get to, there's an island called Carryall in Ohio, just before you get into Indiana, and then the next island would put you almost at the Trier Creek, so you could actually use that to find the Trier Creek and go south. So there you are.
Nicely done. Tim, I'm blown away. Thank you very much for the call.
Well, you guys have a great day. Thanks.
All right, you too. Thank you very much. What can I say, Jason and Doug? A fantastic job by Tim.
Yeah, well, absolutely. You notice the more familiar you are, the better the directions get. He gave us really good directions, and then he added to it. You know, there's this, you go by three islands. Instead of three stoplights and take a right, three islands and go right on Trier Creek. That's wonderful.
Sounds good to me. We've got one more caller on the line, and then we just have to get to a break for the news here. We've got Carol Joy on the line. Good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Hello.
Hi.
Mine's going to be short and sweet.
All right.
If you're heading, if you're east of the Massinawa Reservoir, you're going to put your canoe in the Massinawa River. And you're going to go down that and zigzag, and you're going to go through some beautiful woody areas and just keep on the river until you get to the reservoir. And once you get to the reservoir, you'd go under a bridge and by on the south side of a little island, and you go along the south side of the river or the reservoir until you come to a house that's on a huge hill. And you would dock there and walk up that huge hill, and you're there.
Nicely done, Jason. Terrific. Some analysis.
Let me see if I can work in reverse and come up
now,
with...
Now, if you came from the west, you would have to paddle up that river, and then you'd have to take your canoe out and walk up a big hill and rock around and put your... canoe in the reservoir, and you would have to paddle a whole long way.
Oh man, that sounds like a lot of work. I'm only a public radio host.
Yeah,
That was a fantastic job, Carol Joy. Thank you very much.
Yeah, mine's very simple, but the hill getting up to our house is a challenge. For most people.
Especially if you have a canoe in tow, I'm sure.
Well, not really. We take our canoe and we just pull it up with a tractor, cheating all the way.
Uh-huh. All right. Easy enough.
So look for the tractor and the cable.
That's right.
You're right.
Carol Joy, we have to let you go. We have to take a break,
okay,
but thank you so much.
Goodbye.
All right, bye-bye. Jason Kissel, yeah, I think you got some folks thinking today. A wonderful topic. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
We're going to take a quick break for the news, and when we come back, we'll open up the phones for your plant and garden questions. Do stay with us. This is Midday Matters.
Support for this program on WBOI is provided by Christine and Ed Schaefer, broker, realtors with Northeastern Group Realty. Trust the professionals with proven performance. Online at christine-ed.com. The Schaefer Team.
Good afternoon. I'm Katie Anderson with WBOI News. Lawmakers will attempt the first comprehensive reform of Indiana's criminal code in 30 years next session after legislation prepared over the last 3 years by a legislative study committee was approved Tuesday. But as Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports, some state criminal justice organizations say the reform package will still require significant work before it can gain their support.
A huge portion of the criminal code overhaul will be put in one piece of legislation next session, something Indiana Public Defender Council Executive Director Larry Landis says may not work. Landis prefers a piecemeal approach, making incremental steps towards reforming the code, but he says that's not the effort's biggest obstacle.
When you ask elected officials to vote to reduce penalties for crime, they get a little nervous because it's safe to say we want new crimes and enhanced punishments.
Indiana Prosecuting Attorneys Council Executive Director David Powell says both sides will have to give something in order to make the reform work. But he says he doesn't see a crisis situation that necessarily calls for significant penalty reduction.
And I feel uncomfortable as an old prosecutor saying that lowering penalties will reduce crime. You could argue that it might increase.
Both Democrat and Republican legislators say they expect to pass a significant portion of criminal code reform legislation in the upcoming session. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith.
Residents of public housing in Fort Wayne won't be allowed to smoke in their apartments or within 20 feet of their building starting January 1st. The Fort Wayne Public Housing Authority Board of Commissioners approved the smoke-free housing policy after a survey of residents found a majority of residents supported it. The rule requires each household to sign lease addendums agreeing that each household member and visitor will refrain from smoking in their apartment, anywhere in their building, and within 20 feet from the building. American Lung Association in Indiana Executive Director Allison Martin says the agency hopes other public and private facilities will follow Fort Wayne's lead. She cites the health benefits to residents and the cost savings in facility maintenance. The State Board of Education approved school letter grades Wednesday. It was the first year the Department of Education calculated the grades based on new rules in Indiana's No Child Left Behind waiver. As State Impact Indiana's Ellie Moxley reports, the scores were much better than some critics of the new measure had predicted.
State Superintendent Tony Bennett says the letter grades released Wednesday paint a positive picture of Indiana's schools. 60% received A's and B's, and just one school is on the state's intervention list this year.
First of all, I don't know how anyone can say something's unfair when the percentage of your A's in the state is greater than your percentage of the combination of your D's and F's.
In the past, school letter grades were calculated based on how many students passed state standardized tests. The new system is based on a more complex measure called a growth model. Students are now compared to peers who scored the same on the test the year before to make sure they're achieving a full year of academic growth. Bennett says it's an improvement, but his challenger in this year's election, Democrat Glenda Ritz, dismissed the grades as inaccurate.
We actually have schools that have gone from F's to A's and A's to F's. Now, I don't know how you explain that to parents.
Ritz says she'd replace the state's current assessment system with simple pre- and post-tests that would give teachers and parents a better idea of how much students are learning without comparing them to their peers. For State Impact Indiana, I'm Ellie Moxley.
And now back to Midday Matters with your host, Sean Beter.
Minutes before the top of the hour, 1 o'clock, you're listening to Midday Matters Outer Spaces here on 89.1 FM WBOY. We were talking in the, it was going to be the first half of the show, but gosh, we went through most of the program on Jason Kissel's fantastic question about describing where you live without using streets, without using county lines or state lines. And that we'll leave that question open for the rest of the program if you'd like to give it a shot. Or if you have another plant and garden question that we can tackle in the remaining 10 minutes or so of this hour, give us a call, 260-452-1185. Or you can always email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet. We're at Midday Matters. We are going to pivot just a little bit here. And Doug Hackbarth, we were talking earlier in the program. You brought in some extra notes about walnuts.
Well, you know, people called last week and asked a lot of questions about walnut trees and plants that you can plant around walnuts and things that you can't plant around. So I did a little more research. And first of all, if you have a walnut tree, this is a key factor right here, 50 to 60 to even 80 feet away from the walnut tree can have an effect on certain plants, nightshade plants in particular, which would include peppers and tomatoes.
You're talking about a tree that's planted within.
Yes, you have to be 60 to 80 feet away from that tree. Now, what'll happen if you plant a tomato plant, like where my garden used to be? I don't live in that house anymore, but where it used to be, it's only 10 feet from a walnut tree that didn't used to be there. Where did it come from? Squirrels, no doubt. I used to grow. Well, if you have a garden that's near a walnut tree now, what'll happen is you'll plant your tomato plant and it'll do good for the first 6 to 8 weeks. It'll look great. And then it'll be poisoned by that, what is it, juglone?
Yeah, juglone.
Juglone is what secretes from the root system the worst. It's also in the leaves, in the bark, but you can still use walnut leaves to compost if you compost them for at least 3 to 6 months. The leaf jugulone disappears relatively fast, but the root system will always get your plants if you're there. And I have, as I said, the nightshade plants is a bad one. And there's quite a few things that are bad, but also there's a lot of things, surprisingly, that you can plant by a walnut tree and have good luck.
Do we have any examples we might be able to toss out?
Yes, we do. But I'm going to have to look here. I do have a list, and I want to make sure I find the right spot.
And, well, you know, while he's doing that, the reason that it's a great adaptation for that tree, what better way to ensure you've got a better chance of surviving as a plant than to inhibit the growth of the plants underneath you? And so that's really why it does that. It's a wonderful tactic because all of a sudden, all seedlings are competing for the same stuff, you know, the amount of light that they can get with their canopy, the soil, the water. And so if you've got a strategy where you can stunt those around you, man, that's great. So it's a wonderful defense mechanism.
A wonderful defense mechanism, although perhaps a headache for landscape designers.
Sure, sure. And some of the plants, I'll just rattle off a few very quickly that will not grow under rhubarb. Listen to me. Under these walnut trees is rhubarb, peonies. These are just to name things that people like to plant. Hydrangeas, lilies, asparagus does not work well there. Columbine. In the trees, silver maples, birches, white birches, apples and cranberries don't do well there. Mugo pine, and that's basically all I'm going to say about that. But now the list of plants that do well is tremendous, and I won't go through them all. Obviously, I'll just pick a few, but eastern redbuds, Japanese maples. It's funny that one maple doesn't, but Japanese maples are okay there. Hemlocks are okay. Clematis, we all like clematis. Euonymus, forsythia, rose of Sharon. These are things that will do and grow okay around the walnuts. And then in flowers, marigolds, begonias, morning glories. I'm surprised morning glories. Aren't they a nightshade plant?
I thought they were in a similar family, at least.
That's what I thought. Yeah. And then zinnias. So there's some things that do grow. And then squash, melons, beans, carrots, and corn.
Everything you wanted to know about walnuts, trees, yeah. And you were too afraid to ask.
And I thought I'd rattle it off fast because we are limited on time.
And we do have a caller on the line here. And, of course, we invite a few more folks to give us a call in the last 6 minutes of the program, 260-452-1185. Or you can email us, middaymatters@nipr.fm. Let's open up the phones. We've got Roger on the line. Roger, good afternoon here on Midday Matters.
Oh, good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Hi, Roger.
Hey, you've probably covered this already, but I don't get the opportunity to listen to every show and all the show. But I was wondering about wintering over mandevillas. I brought them in the house several weeks ago, put them in the basement in front of some north-facing French doors.
Mm-hmm. That's good. That's good. And keeping them fairly close to the windows is probably a cool spot. That's good. The whole idea of trying to keep these things through the winter months is to, number one, not to try and push the growth. So you're going to want to run them extremely dry through the winter months. And if the temperature is colder, they won't dry out as fast. That's a good thing. I'm recommending watering once every 4 to 6 weeks tops. That's it. Okay. Now, I know when they're outside, if they're in a small pot, you got to water them once a day, and twice a day is almost necessary. But through the winter months, the sunny window's great, cooler temperatures, run them dry, and you might as well trim back quite a bit because because otherwise it's just all going to fall off anyway, and they'll be sweeping it out.
They're beautiful right now, but I know I'm going to have to cut them back.
You need to cut them back. You need to cut them back to the size of the original trellis that they came on.
Okay.
And that's not very big, you know, 3.5-4 feet tall.
Right.
At best, probably more like 3 to 3.5 feet. And then if the leaves fall off, that's fine. It'll grow more.
Sure.
Again, as I say, we're not trying to push the growth. We're just trying to keep these things more in a dormant state. And so the cool temperatures is good. And no fertilizer. I can't emphasize enough Fertilizer in the wintertime is just not a great thing. The plants are not getting enough sunshine to eat up that fertilizer and make use of it. And you can easily over-fertilize plants in the wintertime.
And that'll burn them?
No, they'll just die. They're not taking up it. It could burn the roots, yeah, but more than that, it'll clog them up. I'd say it's more like clogging than burning.
Yeah.
It'll close them down.
Okay, very good.
Yeah.
Roger, we appreciate your call. Thank you very much.
Yes, sir, and thank you.
All right, bye-bye. Have a very good day. Just 3 minutes left in the program here. If you get in right now, we might be able to get your question on the air, 260-452-1185. Or you can call us toll-free, 1-800-471-9264. Guys, we have just a few minutes left here, but briefly, Jason, you're kind of a tree guy here. And Doug, yep. Of course, you've got Broadview. I want to start with you, Jason. It's now November. We're getting into the colder months. What are some of the common questions that folks ask you? Now that the color is starting to leave the trees, that the season is very clearly changing.
Sure. This time of year, a lot of people are starting to see some damage to the trees that they may not notice through the summer because the leaves were obscuring it. And so it's a good time to look at those trees, and if there's obvious hazards, to go ahead and remove them. You can often get better pruning rates during the winter. You don't want to do a lot of normal pruning, but if there's a hazard, you might as well go ahead and remove it over the winter. A lot of times, too, people are starting to worry about their evergreen trees because they notice that some of it's turning brown, and that's normal. Even though it's evergreen, they do drop their needles, and so those should be dropping a fifth to a third of their needles this time of year, and so that's normal. That's just what the tree does. And so that's the kind of the two common things that I notice people asking about this time of year.
Yeah, and with those evergreens and the brown needles, I like to just get a good plastic rake and just rake over them. That'll shake those needles off without really doing much pruning on the evergreens.
Yeah.
Doug, just about a minute left in the program here. November 1st, what's the most common question you're getting at Broadview these days?
Well, of course, people are wanting to know about planting bulbs. Is it too late to plant tulips, hyacinths, daffodils, etc.? And it's never too late as long as you can dig in the ground. You can put them in, and they're the most satisfying things. They won't feel like they're satisfying when you're planting them. You're just sticking these things in the hole in the ground, and in your mind you're thinking, how would I like to be stuck in a hole in the ground through the winter? I wouldn't like it, but these bulbs love it. And the satisfaction comes next spring when they will all grow and bloom without fail. They're just the most reliable things you can plant.
All right. Well, I think we're going to have to leave it there. But Doug Hackbarth, thank you very much for being with us once again. Jason Kissel, first Thursday of the month. You can hear him right here on 89.1 FM. Jason, thanks so much.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
Thanks to everybody who called in on our very entertaining question during the first part of this hour. Thanks to Roger for his question later in the hour as well. And thanks to you for tuning in each and every week. I'm Sean Beter, and this is Northeast Indiana Public Radio, broadcasting from the Madge Rothschild Studio at 89.1 HD Channel 1. This is WBOY Fort Wayne and WBKE North Manchester, a service of Manchester University. We're coming up on 1 o'clock. Fresh air is next. Have a great day.